Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, February 25, 2023. Viewpoints. Pre-K education should matter more. Patricia Maurer, guest columnist. For his entire 30 years of military service, during assignments across the country and across the globe, my dad maintained his permanent address as 1010 Blue Bonnet Street, Big Spring. Our cars, whether driven in California or Virginia, sported Texas license plates, and family road trips headed in one direction, home to Texas. When ready to make a college choice, my dad had two criteria, a state school and one located in Texas. UT Austin was my choice, and I graduated with my degree in elementary education in 1968. Thus began my lifelong commitment to the children of Texas, and I will not give up. Friends, fellow Texans, Midlanders, it would be easy to succumb to despair, but instead I am energized about the opportunities we have to improve life for the children in this state, and especially in this community. Quite frankly, the picture is far from pretty. If you are an advocate, intent on change and a better quality of life for our children, the needs and issues are easy to identify. It's my observation, however, especially where children are concerned, we often mire ourselves in conversations of little relevance, the vile politics that Stuart Doreen referenced in his opinion piece published in the Reporter-Telegram on February 18. We succumb to quick-fix solutions that do not touch the roots of the problem. Think about two tried and true concepts. Begin with the end in mind and front load. In August, the Annie E. Casey Foundation released its 2022 Kids Count Data Book. The foundation examines quality of life issues for children in all 50 states. Hold on to your Stetsons, Texans. Texas, which ranks as the ninth largest economy among nations of the world, larger than Canada, Korea, Russia, and Australia, Texas, where the GDP grew by a whopping 8.2% in the third quarter of 2022, ranks 45th in the nation for overall child well-being and continues to rank in the bottom half in all four child well-being categories, economic, education, health, and family and community. Bottom line, we live in a wealthy state, which seems satisfied to shortchange its children. That's not good enough for me, and it should not be good enough for you. The data from this report hitting me squarely between the eyes related to preschool participation. The percentage of 3- and 4-year-olds attending pre-K in Texas has not changed since 2012. Why does this matter? We know children who attend pre-K programs are less likely to be retained or to be recommended for special education services in first, second, or third grades. Participation in high-quality preschool programs links to other long-term and life-changing outcomes, improved discipline, high school and college graduation, higher income, and less likelihood of incarceration. While Texas requires school districts to provide pre-K programs, funding formulas leave districts with a choice. Serve both 3- and 4-year-olds in half-day programs, or serve 4-year-olds in full-day programs. Public school preschool programs in MISD are available for 4-year-old children labeled educationally disadvantaged, and those who have limited English proficiency are in the care of the Department of Children's Services or have parents who are active duty military or first responders. A notable exception, one that I discuss later, is the pre-kindergarten academy at Midland College, open both to 3 and 4-year-olds meeting these criteria. Note first this fact. The Texas Education Code defines educationally disadvantaged as eligible to participate in the national free or reduced price lunch program. A family of 3, a single parent with 2 children, as an example, must make less than $40,184 per year in gross income before deductions for Social Security tax and insurance costs for children to qualify for reduced lunch services, and a family of 4 must earn less than $51,338 before taxes. That's not a lot of money. Many parents with non-qualifying incomes cannot afford available private options. Private options in Midland often cost $700 a month, even those options provided by companies for their employees. Moms who stay home to care for their children are not reflected in our highly positive unemployment statistics because they are not actively seeking employment. Thus, we have many Midland families underemployed and many young children who would benefit from early childhood services, but do not get them. Another issue lurks below the surface, the issue of ensuring preschool programs meet standards for high-quality programs. In addition to a core set of health and safety requirements, high-quality programs enjoy strong and supportive leadership, knowledgeable staff, a structured and age-appropriate curriculum, a positive and engaging environment, and opportunity for active involvement on the part of parents. High-quality preschool programs are more than daycare. This is where I commend the project to expand the pre-kindergarten academy at Midland College, made possible by lead gifts of $10 million each from the Permian Strategic Partnership, PSP, and Scarborough Foundation, grants of $1 million or more by Abel Hanger Foundation, the Beal Foundation, and the Henry Foundation, and generous contributions from individuals, families, and businesses in the community. This program does meet the standards for a high-quality preschool program, and its students most assuredly benefit. The private-public partnership making this success story possible allows for an expanded enrollment of 88 to 288 at an in-district charter school and part of MISD. Expanded enrollment is to be celebrated. From my perspective, however, the most important aspect of the program will be opportunity for prospective teachers to complete early childhood teaching certification at Midland College and earn bachelor's degrees. These graduates will be ready to help proliferate high-quality standards in other preschool programs. This lab school will be a win-win for young children and for teachers. Want to get the biggest bang for the buck in improving school outcomes in Midland? We need to find ways to replicate and expand this initiative. We need to find ways to facilitate access to high-quality preschool programs for every child in Midland, and to bolster enrollment in the teacher certification program at Midland College. The Midland College MISD program is a model program, but we have the resources to make Midland a model community for early childhood education in Texas. It will not be a quick fix, but it could be a high-powered and important locally grown initiative. Begin with the end in mind and front load, as this makes a real difference for children. Let's look forward, make good plans, and celebrate what works.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram, Health and Wellness for Wednesday, March 1st, 2023. Midland Health, MMH offering support for moms. Midland Memorial Hospital offers a maternal mental wellness program. The program serves mothers considered extremely low to moderately low income. It serves those who are at risk for postpartum depression or other mental health issues, admitted to the hospital due to miscarriage or stillbirth, or have an infant in the neonatal intensive care unit, NICU. Moms are assessed and connected with appropriate support to promote and assist with mental health. Each mom is provided with education and tools by the Mental Health and Wellness Department at MMH, along with physician guidance offered by Texas Tech Psychiatry and licensed professional counselors. Texas Tech Psychiatry is also offering outreach expertise to OBGYNs, pediatricians, and primary care physicians treating patients with PPD or fetal demise to provide easier access and more effective mental health care services through their program, Permian Mothers Matter. These programs aim to support and normalize maternal wellness in the community and offer collaborative care to mothers in need. Diet and nutrition. Study. Artificial sweetener linked to higher heart attack risk. The popular artificial sweetener erythritol, which is used as a sugar substitute in many low-calorie, low-carb, and keto products, has been linked to heightened risk of heart attack, stroke, and death, according to a study published in Nature Medicine. Looking at more than 4,000 people in the United States and Europe who were undergoing elective cardiac evaluation, researchers at the Cleveland Clinic found those who had greater erythritol levels in their blood had a higher chance of experiencing adverse cardiac events. In preclinical studies, they also found evidence that ingestion of erythritol increased blood clot formation. Researchers caution that more study is necessary and that participants independently had a high prevalence of cardiovascular disease, so the, quote, translatability, end quote, of the findings to the general population needs to be determined. Still, the results offer a significant challenge to product marketing that pitches erythritol as a healthy natural sugar alternative. And the insights arrive as erythritol has come into vogue, with plant-based, keto, and low-carb diet trends spurring interest in alternative sweeteners sold as, quote, natural, end quote. According to 2022 reports from research firm Nielsen IQ, sales growth for products with erythritol grew 43% over 2 years. And products that claim to contain, quote, natural sweeteners, end quote, grew by 91%. Quote, sugar-free, end quote, products with erythritol are often recommended to individuals with obesity, diabetes, or metabolic syndrome who are already at risk for such cardiovascular health problems, the paper's authors note. In a statement about the study, Stanley Hazen, a cardiologist at the Cleveland Clinic, called for more research into alternative sweeteners. Quote, cardiovascular disease builds over time, and heart disease is the leading cause of death globally, end quote, he said. Quote, we need to make sure the foods we eat aren't hidden contributors, end quote. Hazen wrote in an email that his team did not set out to study artificial sweeteners, but was rather looking to find chemicals in the blood that identified, quote, who was at risk for a future heart attack, stroke, or dying in the next 3 years, end quote. The compound that predicted this, quote, ended up being erythritol, end quote. His team then developed a test for it, independently tested their hypothesis, and replicated the findings. A sugar alcohol that is found in small amounts in fruits and vegetables, erythritol is poorly metabolized, excreted almost entirely in urine, and characterized as a, quote, zero-calorie, end quote, sweetener. Many foods that claim to be naturally flavored, such as keto cookies and granola, contain erythritol. But when it is artificially added to processed foods, it is seen at levels, quote, 1,000-fold higher than endogenous levels, end quote, the researchers wrote. Greg Neely, a professor of functional genomics at the University of Sydney, who has studied artificial sweeteners, said many, quote, natural, end quote, labels amount to, quote, misleading marketing, end quote, noting that people assume, quote, if it occurs in nature, it's probably not as bad for us, end quote. Neely said the Cleveland Clinic study is, quote, extremely important, and it will likely trigger immediate changes in what we consume, end quote, emphasizing that researchers went in, quote, without any specific agenda, end quote. The study highlights that, quote, we don't fully understand what the health consequences of industrialized food have been, and just because something is sold as natural doesn't mean it is safe or good for us to consume at an industrial scale, end quote. The merits and shortcomings of alternative sweeteners such as aspartame, sucralose, stevia, and saccharin have been debated for years. Often pitched as a weight loss shortcut that offers the sweet taste of high sugar foods without the health consequences, such sweeteners have been linked to higher calorie consumption and higher blood sugar levels. One 2019 study suggested that drinking artificially sweetened soft drinks was associated with increased deaths from circulatory disease. Still, some maintain that such associations are a product of the lifestyle of people who consume these sweeteners, not the sweeteners themselves. And despite decades of studies into the safety of sugar substitutes and whether consuming them helps or harms the body, much of the research is inconclusive. Still, Neely said he tries to avoid artificial sweeteners, quote, when at all possible, end quote. The incidence of conditions such as obesity and diabetes is rising at a rate, quote, much faster than they would if this was just genetic, end quote, Neely said. Quote, so we know our environment is driving these diseases somehow, and the industrialization of our food is one critical component we need to consider, end quote. Mental health. Learn about eating disorders. It is well known an eating disorder can be life-threatening, but you may not know eating disorders are the second leading cause of deaths when compared to all other mental and emotional health conditions combined. That's one important reason February 27th through March 5th has been designated Eating Disorder Awareness Week. The therapists at Intuitive Healing Therapy, alongside dietitian Denise Del Principe, together plan to turn the Permian Basin's attention to these life-threatening disorders. Events for the week include Thursday, Intuitive Healing Therapy and Thoughtful Nutrition at One Hope Church Coffee Shop, 2503 West Ohio Avenue. We'll host eating disorder screenings / informational sessions from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Spanish-speaking therapists will be available from noon to 2 p.m. Attendees will have the chance to chat with treatment professionals specializing in eating disorders. All persons curious for information for themselves or loved ones are welcome. Friday through Sunday, social media videos with information and resources for those struggling with the relationship with food and their body will be posted by at Thoughtful Nutrition, at Intuitive_Healing_Therapy, and at Jen_Mason_Counseling. Mayo Clinic. What can you do for an overactive bladder? Overactive bladder, or OAB, is a condition that causes a sudden urge to urinate. It affects both men and women. The urge may be difficult to stop, and overactive bladder may lead to the involuntary loss of urine known as urge incontinence. If you have overactive bladder, you may feel embarrassed, isolate yourself, or limit your work and social life. The good news is that a brief evaluation can determine whether there's a specific cause for your overactive bladder symptoms. Is an overactive bladder common? Overactive bladder affects over 34 million U.S. adults. Urge incontinence is the most prominent form of incontinence among women in the U.S., where 1 in 4 women over 18 experience episodes of leaking urine involuntarily. What causes an overactive bladder? Pregnancy, childbirth, and menopause are all our major reasons for the increased prevalence of incontinence in women compared to men. When your bladder is full of urine, the brain usually signals the bladder to empty. Your bladder muscles contract and force urine out of the bladder. When the bladder is not full, your bladder is relaxed. With a healthy bladder, the brain signals that the bladder is getting full, but there is time to wait to go to the bathroom. With an overactive bladder, there is no waiting. People often feel a sudden urge to urinate. This also can happen if the bladder is not full. If the nerve signals between the bladder and brain do not work properly, an overactive bladder can result. Overactive bladder also can occur when your bladder muscles are too active, causing the bladder muscles to contract and pass urine before the bladder is full. This sudden, strong urge to urinate is called urinary urgency. When is it important to talk to a healthcare provider? An overactive bladder can get in the way of your work, social life, exercise, and sleep routines. It's important to discuss a variety of treatments with your healthcare provider, as overactive bladder symptoms can make daily life difficult. What can you do to reduce your risk of overactive bladder? These healthy lifestyle choices may reduce your risk of overactive bladder. Maintain a healthy weight, drink enough water, get regular daily physical activity and exercise, limit consumption of caffeine and alcohol, quit smoking, manage chronic conditions such as diabetes that might contribute to overactive bladder symptoms. How do urology providers help you manage your OAB symptoms? A combination of treatment strategies may be the best approach to relieve overactive bladder symptoms. There are a variety of treatments for managing overactive bladder, and a combination of treatment strategies may be the best approach. Depending on your situation, options may include simple behavioral modifications, physical therapy, oral medications, or outpatient procedures. Scheduling an appointment with your healthcare team is the first step. Discuss your medical history and current symptoms so they can develop an individualized treatment plan for you. Be happier. Treat your weekend like a vacation. Americans spend more hours at work than people in many other countries. And though Americans often get fewer vacation days than people in other parts of the world, many don't use even the vacation days they have. Time off is important to reset and recalibrate. But if you're having trouble making time for a vacation, recent research suggests that simply treating your weekends like a vacation can make you happier. The findings from researchers at the UCLA Anderson School of Management are based on a series of experiments. In one study of 441 workers, half were instructed to spend a spring weekend like they would any other, but the other participants were instructed, quote, treat this weekend like a vacation, end quote. When people returned to work Monday, those who spent the weekend like vacationers reported more happiness, less negativity, and more satisfaction than those who approached the weekend like they always did. Weekend, quote, vacationers, end quote, also spent more money in vacation mode, about $130 compared to $104. But it wasn't money that bought happiness. After controlling for the amount of money spent, the vacation group was still happier than the control group. One reason the vacation approach may have worked wonders, the vacation mindset appears to be more mindful mindset. Vacationers reported being more attentive to the present moment. Quote, treating the weekend like a vacation activates a mindset shift, nudging us out of our constant doing mode, where our activities are items we're trying to get through to check off our to-do lists, end quote, said Cassie Holmes, professor at UCLA's Anderson School and a study co-author. Quote, the vacation mindset allows us to feel like we can actually take a break and enjoy the moment, end quote. While you might assume someone could get more joy out of a trip to an amusement park than sitting at home watching television, it wasn't the activities that predicted happiness. Quote, our results suggest that directing attention to the present was most important for reaping emotional benefits from time off, end quote, the authors wrote. Study. Daily cannabis use increases risk of heart disease. Using marijuana every day increases the risk of developing heart disease, U.S. researchers found, adding to an increasingly complex picture about the drug's health impact. The results released Friday show daily cannabis users were 34% more likely to have coronary artery disease, the most common form of heart disease, compared with those who never used the drug. Previous studies suggested cannabis smokers, especially younger people, may have an elevated risk of suffering strokes or other ailments. Quote, in terms of the public health message, it shows that there are probably certain harms of cannabis use that weren't recognized before, and people should take that into account, end quote, said lead author Ishan Paranjpe, a resident physician at Stanford University. The researchers analyzed data on how often 175,000 people used cannabis and their rates of heart disease. The study found a causal link between daily use and an increased risk of the heart condition over several years, according to a release from the American College of Cardiology. The researchers also took into account other potential causes of cardiac complications, like using tobacco and alcohol, but didn't distinguish between different ways of using the drug. There was a dose response, the researchers found. Using it monthly rather than daily didn't lead to a significant increase in risk, they said.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. COVID vaccine and heart-related deaths. Dear Dr. Roach, lately I've been hearing about a relationship between the COVID vaccines and a significant increase in heart-related deaths. Please review the latest information on this subject and your recommendations. Answer. While there are multiple studies published, and unfortunately, misleading conclusions on social media based on faulty analyses, the best data come from the UK, where all-cause mortality is very significantly reduced in people who have had the COVID vaccine compared to unvaccinated people. A separate analysis from the Florida Department of Health also found lower all-cause mortality in all age groups among vaccinated compared to unvaccinated. This is likely due to the fact that getting COVID is a major risk in multiple types of death, and the vaccine is effective at preventing serious COVID. Certainly in high-risk groups, such as people with heart failure, the vaccine prevents death very powerfully. Unvaccinated people are 3 times more likely to die from any cause than those who have been fully vaccinated. My recommendation remains consistent. Everyone who can get the vaccine should get the vaccine. And it's more important for people who have more risk factors. Older people, those with heart or lung problems, and those with problems in their immune system due to a medical condition or its treatment are at a particularly high risk and should ensure that they are fully boosted with the vaccine.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, March 2nd. Sister-in-law miffed when she's left out of wedding. Dear Abby, my brother-in-law and his fiancée, Shanna, have been dating for 5 years. They have a beautiful son and have a date set for their wedding. I have been with my husband for 4 years and married for about a year. We did not have a grand wedding celebration, just a simple city hall ceremony accompanied by a dinner with immediate family. However, Shanna is having the opposite. She has invited my husband to be part of the wedding, but not me. I'm very disappointed because I thought we got along rather well and I considered us friends. Aren't the brother and sister-in-law supposed to walk down the aisle together in the wedding ceremony? That's how I have seen other couples do it. My husband also finds it strange that Shanna wouldn't ask me to be part of the wedding. After all, I've been part of the family long enough. What do you think? Signed, Overthinking in New York. Dear Overthinking, your husband will walk down the aisle to his brother because he is part of the wedding party. No rule of etiquette decrees that because you are a sister-in-law, you must be part of the ceremony. If you had a simple wedding for financial reasons, you can always renew your vows in a grand fashion. Please don't blame your soon-to-be sister-in-law for not making you a bridesmaid. Ask her if there's any task you could perform, a reading perhaps, to be involved and useful. Dear Abby, I work with my husband in retail merchandising. A woman on our team is a few years younger than I am and very touchy-feely with my husband. She whispers in his ear and stands very close to him. My husband says that may be just the way she is. I told him he is wrong because she doesn't do it when her boyfriend is around and she doesn't do it to anyone else. How should I handle this? Signed, Upset in Florida. Dear Upset, tell your teammate that from where you stand, it looks like she is hitting on your husband and you don't like it. Then tell her that if she doesn't stop, you will report it to the team leader or your boss. Dear Abby, my daughter pledged not to have children until her mate proposed and they were married. Now, past the age of 30, she worries her biological clock will run out. Her mate says he's ready for children, but still hasn't popped the question, although they talk of marriage. It has been 10 years. What's a girl to do? Signed, Baffled Mama in Ohio. Dear Baffled Mama, as you and your daughter should have realized, talk of marriage can go on for decades and beyond. If her mate wanted to be married, the two of them would be. In this case, a 30-something girl who wants to be a mother after marriage should pop the question herself. And if his answer is no, she should move on so she can find a willing husband.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.